Monster Man, episode 127. Shocker to Skeleton Warrior. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through the vast and rich lands of the S section of the Fiend Folio, the 1981 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. We got two very different monsters in today's episode, but before we get started on them, I'm pleased to hear that I've been getting a lot of positive response to the two monster format. It does feel like it's possible to go into more depth about the monsters, and also it's a bit easier to prepare, so I think we're going to be sticking with it for the near term. Again, if you're listening to this on the day that it comes out, which should be Friday, 30th November, then tomorrow is Dragon Meet, London's big role-playing game and a tabletop game in general, I guess, convention, and I'm going to be there. So, I don't know, I have made my little Monster Man badge, so if you see someone wearing it, it is the only one, so say hi. Finally, listener and Patreon supporter Tom sent me a reference to a Dragon magazine issue 252, which apparently had D&D stats for the creature from Oh Whistle and I'll Come to You My Lad, the ghost story by M.R. James that I discussed in the Sheet Phantom episode. I haven't had a chance to read the article yet, but apparently the idea is just as silly as it sounds. I don't think that the ghost from an M.R. James ghost story necessarily improves by going toe-to-toe with your ranger, but that might just be me. But thank you, Tom. I appreciate the reference, and particularly that you, like, took the time to go and look the thing up. All right, so let's get started. First, we have the Shocker, created by Roger Musson. And the Shocker, I mentioned in the entry for the Sandman that the Sandman contains this reference to, like, the extra-planar nature of the creature that was similar to a later entry, and that is, of course, the Shocker, and the Sandman and the Shocker are both by the same creator, Roger Musson. I saw a reference the other day. Someone writing about the Fiend Folio talked about the Musson monsters, and certainly Roger Musson is one of the most prolific creators in the Fiend Folio, but I don't know if I have a sense of, like, a coherent pattern of Musson monsters, although there do seem to be kind of, like, focused on weird effects, at least in terms of the Sandman and the Shocker. So the Shocker is a creature surrounded by a halo of blue electrical sparks. And in fact, it seems that this is a creature made of living electricity, which of course means that it is Electro rather than the Shocker, who doesn't shock people at all, but wears a mattress and has, like, earthquake powers. And indeed, the entry even speculates that it comes from some kind of electromagnetic plane. I mentioned in a previous episode that I'm not so sure about using science fictional or even science-y kind of terms in Dungeons & Dragons, and I think I would not use the term electromagnetic plane in my game. I actually quite like that the term that 5th edition D&D uses for sort of electrical damage is lightning damage. It's a small thing, but I do think it kind of contributes to a more pre-modern feel. Although this is a significant aesthetic divide, particularly within modern D&D, maybe one that I'll talk about at some point. It's a bit odd. It hits you and discharges electrical energy into you. And it hits you and then you save to see if you can reduce the damage. Like a lot of electrical attacks, it is actually more dangerous against people wearing metal armor. And if you hit it with a metal weapon, it can discharge its electricity through the weapon and into you. It also has different ACs against different types of attack. So, again, a lot of weird rules, but they're all safely contained within this single column. So again, I think we're going for the model that rather than knowing a bunch of kind of universal rules that are consistent across a range of monster types, you're reading a monster entry that has everything there in front of you, which is less useful for creating new things, but more useful for just running a game. Now the implication seems to be, I'm not 100% clear on how the Shocker dies. When it attacks, it's described as discharging electricity. When it dies, it's described as being discharged, and it has very few hit points. It's probably got an average of about 7 hit points. So it's very likely that when you hit the Shocker with your metal weapon, that you could kill it, but in that same moment, it will discharge its energy, you know, up the weapon and into your arm. So I'm not 100% sure. Is the idea that when it discharges itself, it dies? Like, does Shocker strike once and die? That would be inconsistent with their having 11 attacks per round, which is what it says, but I'm going to assume that that's just a typo for one. So think the idea is that this is sort of a being off living electricity, and when you destroy it, it says that it turns to dust and kind of disperses. And at the heart of it might be these gems, which apparently are some kind of like battery or, you know, the center of the enchantment that keeps the shocker going. It's a fun monster, and I do like that it's an electrical puzzle monster, right? Where you want to be, you know, chasing after this thing with quarterstaffs or possibly quarterstaves, rather than sending in tanky McPlate armor to go and hit it with his longsword. The only downside to this is I feel like there are quite a lot of things in the world of Dungeons & Dragons that penalize tanky McPlate armor, who... okay, he's pretty good at lower levels, so, you know, when he's likely to run into a shocker or a rust monster, yeah, that's fine. But the rest of the time, that guy's got a hard enough life. I don't know that the ethos of early editions of Dungeons & Dragons ever really thought that anybody had a hard enough life. So, anyway, the shocker is pretty good. You'd have to kind of, you'd want it to be in a sort of, like, more elemental-themed environment. I don't know that shockers just wander around attacking people. It seems odd. You know, it's not clear what their agenda is or anything like that, and that's probably the hardest part to make up about them. And that is certainly something that's also true of the Sandman, right? This idea that, like, what are these strange extraplanar creatures? What can their agenda be? What a mystery. Like, I just saved myself having to write a bunch of stuff to explain who they are and what they're doing. You know what orcs want? They want to burn your village and take your pigs. But what does the shocker want? Like, what does it hope to get out of anything? I sort of like the idea that maybe it's being, you know, that some alteration to the natural balance of the environment produces these elemental creatures in some way. Either that or they're just, you know, drifting through planar gates or whatever. But, like, you know, in whatever environment, there would be a bunch of surplus electrical charge, right? You know, some wizard's giant lightning rod tower is just sort of spontaneously spawning shockers because there's too much electricity kicking around. I'm aware that that's not how electricity works, but you know, that the manifestation of shockers is basically the static zap of a fantasy world. So they would just be kind of like a weird regional effect of some bigger thing that was going on. I think you could get away with that. Our next monster is the Skeleton Warrior, created by Nigel Morgan. Now, the Skeleton Warrior is a little bit of a frustrating monster in terms of its name, because it is a skeleton, and it is a warrior, but not all skeletons who are warriors, which is most of them, are skeleton warriors. A skeleton warrior is a powerful, undead warrior who's under some kind of curse, but he's not a death knight, even though a death knight certainly appears to be a skeleton who is a warrior and is a powerful undead fighter who is under some kind of curse. My experience with the skeleton warrior comes from the same place that I think many people my age's experience with the skeleton warrior comes from, and that is to say, Quest of the Skeleton Warrior, episode 9 of the Dungeons & Dragons animated series. And when I was a kid, I did not watch the D&D animated series. I mean, for one thing, I would have been 5 when it came out, which is maybe a little young. But also, like, during my prime Saturday morning cartoon watching years, like, this is the era of, like, Transformers and G.I. Joe, and to a lesser extent, He-Man. And with the greatest respect for the Dungeons & Dragons animated series, but I didn't even necessarily watch a lot of Saturday morning cartoons, or if I did, I don't have very clear memories of them. The one I do remember very clearly is that there are 3 times in my life that I have, like, at one time or another, you just turned on the TV or, you know, been at home on a rainy Sunday and put on the TV to watch something. And just like, because in the old days, what we used to do is just turn on the TV and see what was on. And it was the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon. And every single time I've randomly turned on the TV and it's been the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon, it has also been episode 9, Quest of the Skeleton Warrior. So for a long time, before the advent of DVD box sets or whatever, it was the only episode of the D&D cartoon that I'd watched all the way through. And this would have been significantly before I'd ever played Dungeons & Dragons, which I didn't really play until 3rd edition came out. And the Skeleton Warrior in the cartoon is a little bit like the Skeleton Warrior here. The Skeleton Warrior is described as neutral, parentheses, evil. But I don't know that there's that much that's actually evil about them. They are victims of a curse, and their souls are trapped in these magical circlets. And honestly, this entry is really about the circlet. If you have the circlet, then you basically have the Skeleton Warrior's soul. And therefore, you can command it, you can see through its eyes. It basically becomes your minion, but you have to stay within range of it at all times. And you can't, like, obstruct the circlet by any means. So, like, if you put a helmet on, it sort of jams the signal from the circlet. If you have the circlet, and the Skeleton Warrior is out of your control, or if you have been using the circlet to control the Skeleton Warrior and you stop, like someone steals the circlet from you, then the Skeleton Warrior will hunt you down and kill you. Essentially, this is a story about a magic circlet that you find on some bad guy. You know, either you have a weedy villain who uses the circlet to control a buff skeletal henchman who only actually wants to be free. He doesn't want to be helping this guy fulfill his evil plan. He wants to get his soul back and presumably thereby break his curse, or at least no longer be under the control of every two-bit wizard and power-hungry fool who uses the circlet to dominate him. Or you find a circlet in a treasure chest and, you know, then you suddenly realize that you're being hunted down by this implacable foe and you're not sure why until you find out what the circlet is and what it does. And then you got to make the decision either to, you know, do the right thing and give this guy his soul back, or do the strategically advantageous thing, pop the circlet on your melon and start ordering an unstoppable undead killing machine around. Well, they're not unstoppable, but they're pretty rugged. And in the cartoon, this is sorta what the Skeleton Warrior does. You know, he's basically Darth Vader, right? That is to say, he was once a member of an order of mystical knights, and he betrayed them all to Venger, stroke the Emperor, in return for powers. But he was kind of, you know, he was kind of betrayed in the bargain and wound up with this curse where he was actually a hideous monstrosity rather than what he hoped he would be. But he eventually redeemed himself and, in this instance, turned back into a regular Joe and went off to go help the youngins find their way out of the world of Dungeons & Dragons, prompting Eric the Snotty Cavalier to remark, correctly, well, we'll never see him again. Now, and, in fact, the artifact that can free this guy from his curse is a circlet, which is used as a metaphor for evil. You know, evil deeds return to themselves, forming a circle until someone breaks the circle of evil with, you know, I don't know, compassion and forgiveness, which is not, therefore, a circlet that you wear on your head, but just a big glowy doodad that Venger and the kids and the Skeleton Warrior fight over. But the idea that the Skeleton Warrior is not such a bad Joe necessarily, you know, that he sinned but he's being punished, and, you know, maybe it's time for him to go home, I think is present in the Skeleton Warrior in a way that it's not in the Death Knight. And, in fact, when I included a Death Knight in my D&D campaign, I think, honestly, what I was really reaching for was a Skeleton Warrior, right? Like, he swore an oath that he would never rest until he had completed this quest, and since the quest couldn't be completed, then he basically continued to live after his death as an undead guy. And I kind of like that, you know. The interesting thing about the Skeleton Warrior is the circlet. It's the circlet and its, like, precarious nature. It's, if you have it and you're using it correctly, then you get to order around this really tough monster that will go and beat up your enemies or protect you or whatever. But as soon as you lose your grip on it, the monster's coming after you. And I think that that's a very, like, relatable metaphor for power, right? The idea that if you've got the handle end of it, it's fantastic, but if you lose your grip on it, it's really dangerous. So Skeleton Warrior is pretty good. It's got a good little scenario effectively contained within it. It's a monster and it's dangerous, but it's also a bit of a tragic figure, and that's always nice, like a creature with some ambiguity. And it was in the cartoon alongside a lot of stuff you wouldn't expect. There's a sheet phantom in that episode. I mean, for a second, it turns Eric into, like, a donkey guy rather than strangling him and turning him into a ghoul. That show really doubled down on bullywugs, too, a choice that I wholeheartedly approve of. Anyway, as you can see, we've got one monster that is mechanically, like, complex, and then narratively sort of, there's nothing really there, and we've got one monster that's just another buff undead fight monster, but the mechanics for the circlet give it some narrative heft. So, like I said, two very different monsters today. Now, next time, we're going to talk about skulks, and then I don't know what I'm going to do about slods, because there's like a 100 different types of slod, and I don't know if I can fit them all into one episode, but I don't know if I want to split them up across episodes. We'll just see how the timing works out. Either way, we're going to be talking about at least skulks next time on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.